Chapter number seven, Hardy's philosophy of life. It has been said already that Hardy does not accept the view that life is governed by two conscious and opposing forces, good and evil, or that good would ultimately triumph. He is not with Browning, who believes God's in his heaven, all's right with the world, or with Tennyson, who sees good slowly evolving through experimental stages. Hardy does not believe in the possibility of perfections, but he does hold that it is our duty to make the most of life by removing the obvious follies and abuses without asking whether they can be all removed. He believes that life here and now, conditioned as it is, can be beautiful and happy, if only we will leave it bravely and truly, surrendering nothing to bogies. Hardy certainly shows us the world in which human individuality and desire are in conflict with the different governing powers, but there is nothing to suggest his contempt for human will, endurance and passion. Harold says that of Hardy's distinctive gifts as novelist and dramatist is his double vision. If he sees the littleness, he sees also the greatness of life. Watching from infinity, he shows human life as futile and trivial, but looking out of the very heart of some farmer or milkmaid, he shows human life heroically grand. All may be futile in the long run, but all are engrossing to the interest and compel admiration. In this stimulus consciousness of man's greatness and of man's futility lies the secret of Hardy's tragedy. Hence lies the secret of his humanitarian pity. The message of Hardy is not altogether one of despair when we consider what power of love, endurance and trust are possessed by a simple rustic girl like Tess. When we contemplate all this beauty slowly ruined by the cause that man himself has it in his power to remove simply by enlarging his ideas, we feel a determination to let no stupidity or timidity stand in the way of such virtue as human nature may possess, and such happiness as human nature may realize. It can never be perfect virtue, it can never be perfect happiness, but it is possible for man, though limited in scope and always under the shadow of an unsympathetic destiny, to strip away artificial cases of misery and waste. Hardy shows in his novels that the mass of men are content to live safely within a comfortable moral order, but he that aspires to free of it must take this upon him. There is no kindly omnipotence to come to the rescue when his own courage or wisdom or strength falls short. Let us conclude with one or two constructive suggestions of Hardy out of a mass invectives against fate, nature, God and society. The mayor of Casterbridge, Hardy says at the end of novel, man should discover the secret of making limited opportunity endurable by cunningly enlarging those minute forms of satisfaction that offer themselves to everybody, not in a positive pain, which thus handled have much of the shame's inspiring effect upon the life as wider interests cursorily embraced. Again, in test of the D. Ubervilles, he say, our plan should be to move onward through good and evil to avoid morbid sorrow, even though we see ugliness in the world, to do good cheerfully following Spinoza, battle with our evil star and follow our ideals. Hardy seems like his angel Claire, still to believe in spirit of the Sermon on the Mount, although he has rejected the ills of Christianity. He is still true to the religion of loving, kindness and purity that Tess earnestly recommends to Alec D. Uberville's converted to agonisticism by herself.